Sky has rated the following film as PG. Parental guidance is advised.
A small rectangle on a black background pans out to large white clouds billowing in a clear blue sky. The words Studio Canal appear in front of this. British Sky Broadcasting presents an Associated London Films production, Steptoe & Son. Starring Wilfred Bramble as Albert Steptoe, Harry H. Corbett as Harold Steptoe, and Carolyn Seymour as Zita. Written by Ray Galton and Alan Simpson. Music composed by Roy Budd and Jack Fishman. Steptoe theme by Ron Grainer. Directed by Cliff Owen. Audio description by Kenneth Blair. A rotund, grumpy-looking traffic warden eyes up two black cars as she wanders along a London street. She continues on and stops to look at a freestanding wooden sign which reads, "Divorce Courts in Session." Turning away, her face suddenly lights up as she spots an overdue parking meter. In front of it sits a rickety horse and cart. The names Steptoe and Son are painted along the side of the dilapidated vehicle. Gleefully, she produces a ticket book from her bag. Albert and Harold emerge into the street from a side exit.
Bleeding wogs.
Yes, all right, then.
Chinese. They've taken the world over.
They're the Japanese, Peter.
Same thing. They've all got them slitty eyes.
Oh, come on, they're tourists bringing the money into the country.
They didn't ought to be allowed to take pictures. They go around snap, snap, snap. Go back to Tokyo.
Oh, God.
I've seen it, son.
Exiting the court, a blonde woman watches them go.
Well, that marriage didn't last very long, did it?
Can't you keep your bitches little cake holes shut for 5 minutes?
A parking ticket in her hand, the traffic warden walks away from the rear of the cart horse.
I knew it was a mistake right from the start. I don't know what you want to get tied up with a dodgy bird like that for in the first place.
So help me, when we get home, I shall ram your lips straight under the sewing machine. Blanket stitch!
Now facing the horse, the warden sticks the ticket to the bridle on its long nose. The name Delilah is embossed on the leather strap around the horse's head. Harold and his father walk past the wooden court sign. Harold slips his arms into a black jacket and buttons it up as they make their way over to their vehicle.
Oh, God, another 2 quid.
He hands over the ticket to his father, who looks at it, then screws it up and drops it into a litter bin. The grizzled old man then lifts up a small metal bucket from a hook on the back of the cart.
Hold up a bit!
The traffic warden vigorously waves her hand in front of her nose. The cart moves forward and on the road sits a large pile of horse droppings. Using his bare hands, Albert scrapes them onto a shovel and dumps them into the bucket. He throws the shovel onto the back of the cart and placing the dung-filled receptacle back on its hook, he pushes down on the excrement with his palms. Harold watches on, looking nauseous. His father sticks out his hand to be helped up onto the cart. Harold moves to take it but quickly withdraws his offer.
Come on, you.
Harold jerks the reins and Delilah moves off. Albert sits beside him, rubbing his dirty hands together and wiping his nose. He then produces a sandwich from a paper bag.
Have one?
No, thank you very much.
Albert tucks in.
You have got some disgusting habits, you really have.
Not as bad as some of yours that come out in the divorce court. Dirty little swine.
Making love with the lights on is not considered a sexual deviation these days.
I never did it.
I don't blame you. You wouldn't have got nothing if you had.
I'm your share, mate, don't you worry. Your mother never complained. Keep a woman satisfied, she don't wander very far.
Cedar was kept well satisfied, thank you.
By who?
Wah, wah. Listen, you. One more remark like that and you go straight onto the next bus. The only reason she left me was because of you.
Me?
Yeah, you. You never liked her, did you, huh? You tried to break it up right from the word go. Frightened to being left on your own, weren't you? Couldn't stand to see me being happy. Here's up!
A small convertible car carrying two nuns pulls out past them.
I'm so sorry, you're...
Harold grimaces.
Doomed from the start, it was. I told you so. You was too good for it. That was the trouble. Different class.
Do you mean a different class?
Common, she was.
Well, good blimey, we're not exactly a couple of Jeremy Thorpes, are we?
That's not the point. You can be poor without being common, and she was common. She was no good, Harold. I curse the day you ever met her. Everything was all right up till then. That was the day everything started to go wrong.
Flashback. Riding on the horse and cart, Harold turns in through a gate into a dilapidated yard. Piles of random junk sit all around.
What?
Pulling the reins, he stops Delilah and jumps down. He holds his side as he walks around the cart and picks up the metal bucket, holding his scarf over his nose to block out the smell emanating from it. As he moves to empty it onto a stinking mound of manure, he stops and turns to see large clouds of dust flying from a rectangular piece of carpet hung across a rope. The grime flies directly onto a blue and white patterned shirt also hung on the line. He tugs at the end of the rope, causing the material to drop to the ground. His father swings with a carpet beater into fresh air, spins around and falls into a pile of hay. Wearing a gas mask over his face, a furious Albert picks himself up.
I can't hear a word you're saying!
You clumsy great pillock! I might have put my elbow out of joint.
I'll put your bloody nose out of joint in a minute! Look at my washing. Filthy! I wanted that shirt clean for tonight.
Why? Where are you going?
Out!
Out? Out? I'll come with you.
Yeah? Nah, you won't be interested. I don't know. Now you're past it.
Past it? Where are you going?
Down to the football club.
What do I want to go down to the football club for? Bleeding awful team. I wouldn't go down there.
There's a stag night on tonight.
If you... Stag night?
Yeah, fundraising, you know, the usual thing. Comic, compare, couple of strippers and a puffy old drag act. You won't be interested.
Strippers?
Yeah. Not your cup of tea.
Well, maybe I mightn't mind going down with you, just to keep you company.
Oh, I won't want you to be bored.
No, I won't be bored. I like comics. I like a bit of a laugh.
So you'd like to go, then?
Just to see what it's like. I could be doing with a night out. It's very lonely in here all day on my own.
Oh.
Well, I better go and get ready.
Oi! It don't start for 3 hours.
Well, we don't want to be late, do we? Want to get up front, not miss anything. Hope they're not skinny birds. I hate skinny birds. I like big thighs. Great big walnut crushers.
Excitedly, he scurries off.
I'm beginning to wish I hadn't mentioned it. He's going to be in an intensive care unit before the night's out.
Sitting in a bath chair, Harold watches a football match on a TV.
Intercepted by us. Meadows weak.
Come on now, lads, play on. That's it.
Albert shuffles in.
Can I use that after you?
I beg your pardon?
I want a bath.
A bath? I didn't know it was the Queen's birthday.
I want to look nice for tonight, don't I? Come on, let's get in after you.
Certainly not. Bathing in other people's water? That is disgusting.
Well, you're not dirty. You're always washing. Look, you can see the bottom. No! But we won't have time to fill it up again. We'd be late.
Then you just have to use the kitchen, won't you?
Give us this scrub and brush, then.
No, I'm using it. You can use the hammer and chisel.
A first-time shot.
The grizzled old man leers back at him as he leaves. Harold shakes a green bottle into the bathwater. He drinks from a wine glass while washing himself. Picking up a watch and realising the time, he quickly wheels himself forward. He changes the channel and a programme on yoga appears. Harold wheels himself back, then spreads his legs out of the bath in preparation.
Kingdoms may come, kingdoms may go.
Albert sits in the kitchen sink among soapy suds. He washes himself with a pot cleaner, rubbing it under his armpits. He shakes some powder from a can into the froth before plunging the scrubber below the water to clean his nether regions. Wearing nothing but a shower cap and towel, Harold wheels the bath chair out of the back door into the yard and pours out the water from within it. He spots an old woman hanging out washing on a line.
Evening, Mrs. Hobbs.
She looks distinctly unimpressed. Harold re-enters the house. He walks over to his father, who is still bathing in the sink, and grabs the pot scrubber from him.
Do you mind? That is for washing plates. Come on, hurry up. We ain't got all night.
You rotten little... it's cold!
How can it be? You've only lost one layer of dirt.
Good dress.
Harold, where's the towel?
It's wet.
Well, am I going to dry myself then?
Use your handkerchief.
He makes a grab for something on a shelf, but unable to reach it, he starts to dry himself with an off-white net curtain which hangs beside him, poking it in his ears and round the back of his neck. Soap suds covering his modesty, he gets up and pulls at the curtain, using it to dry his withered frame. Suddenly it comes away, leaving him exposed at the window. As Mrs. Hobbs screams, he attempts to cover his dignity with a box of washing powder.
Got him.
Well, that's the night, eh?
Father and son enter the busy football club hall. They look around for a place to sit. Albert moves hopefully to the front, but is ushered further to the back by Harold.
I don't see you.
What's the use
of sitting right back here?
Excuse me,
John,
do you mind moving up a bit?
They take their seats and Albert's eyes widen.
Here. These seats are no good, I can't see.
You just have to jump up and down, won't you?
Here. I can't see.
Hard luck, should have got here earlier, Dad.
Oh, come on, swap seats. I'm an old age pensioner.
Shouldn't be here, should you, you dirty old devil?
Yeah. Anybody think you'd ever seen a bit of crumpet?
Oi. I'll look after him.
The lights go down and a large man with a grey suit and purple bow tie takes the stage.
Good evening, gentlemen.
Right, gentlemen, before we go any further, like...
Here, have a kettle some drinks, then. I'll have a pint of bitter.
Then it's just started.
You don't want to go out when the crumpet's on, do you?
Any Scottish people in tonight?
Yeah!
Who paid for your ticket? Listen, there's two geese, see, flying up the M1. And as they're flying up there... What's the matter, mate? Something wrong with your back?
That's good, that's very good.
Oh. Don't forget to shake it, will you? Listen, fellas, listen. So these two geese are flying up the M1, see, and as they're flying up, the jumbo jet went right over the top of them. And one goose said to the other one, Harry, because he knew him. He said, Harry, I wished I could fly like that. He said, you would do it, you had four bums on fire.
Harold enters an empty bar at the back of the venue.
Half a bitter and a vodka martini, please. Any olives?
Any particular colour?
Only ours.
Jokers.
A blonde-haired woman with thick green eyeshadow walks up to the bar.
Hello.
Hello. Are you in the show?
Well, I'm not one of the football team, am I?
Huh? You couldn't do any worse this season.
The barman puts down Harold's drinks.
36, please. Yes, miss.
Gin and tonic. And
oh, do let me get this.
I'm getting one for my friend as well.
That's all right. What's she having?
A bottle of Guinness.
A large gin and tonic and a bottle of Guinness, please.
It's very kind of you.
Oh, it is my pleasure. It is very nice of you to come down here and entertain us.
I'm getting paid, you know.
Well, yeah. He is, of course.
79 altogether.
He fishes in his pocket and hands over payment.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Not at all.
Cheers.
Oh, cheers.
Oh, where are you sitting?
Oh, out there.
Well, I guess that, but where?
Oh, at the back, unfortunately. On the right.
On the right. Cheers.
Cheers.
She smiles and leaves. He watches her go, his eyes glazed over, a smitten look on his face.
21 change. Oi, your change.
Oh. She's a nice girl, isn't she?
A scrubber.
Pardon?
Well, they're all scrubbers, aren't they?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, definitely. Definitely.
So this girl went to the doctor, see? So he said, doctor, I've got all this funny gurgling in my tummy. So he said, well, I'll have to examine you. And he examined her. You got hush puppies on, mate. You can tell they're hush puppies because one's weed over the other one.
Harold sits down, handing his father his drink.
Where have you been? I was going to send out a search party.
I still can't see. They'll be on in a minute. I paid me money. I'm entitled to see the crumpet.
I just met a piece of it.
Did you? Did she have any clothes on?
It's a very nice girl. I think she fancied me.
Get out of it. You don't think they'd pick up anybody in a place like this? Geezers with money, that's what they want. Or girls.
Right, gentlemen, we're about to introduce the first of our two neurotic dancers, or beg your pardon, exotic dancers, here with a pièce de résistance, namely the crumpet voluntary. Give her a nice big hand, gentlemen, the very beautiful Zita!
A spotlight shines in the corner of the stage as Zita stands, arms out, moving rhythmically to the music. She wears a sparkling green sequined dress, long purple gloves and a purple feather boa draped over her shoulders. Sexily, she licks her finger and rubs it on her rear. As the hall of men watch on entranced, she slinks across the stage, eyes looking out into the crowd. Harold claps his hands together in time to the music. She twirls the end of her boa around. Albert leers at her, licking his lips. She shimmies down the stairs from the stage and into the aisle. Dancing up to a seated, white t-shirt wearing man, she stands with her back to him, dipping her body up and down in time to the beat while flicking her boa out to the side. She spins round to face him and bites on the fingers of one of her long gloves to loosen it off her hand. Slowly removing it, she proceeds to rub it on her front before casually tossing it over her shoulder. As the band play on, she moves further up the aisle, removing her second glove. She stops in front of another man and bends her knees up and down, holding the glove in front of her before casting it away. Albert grins wickedly. Lifting the boa from around her neck, she leans forward and with a sultry look in her face, she places it around another man's neck. Standing back in the aisle, she begins to unbutton the top half of her dress from the front. She undoes it at the back and then, reaching up behind her neck, unclips the halter neck. Still holding it in front of her chest, she suddenly casts it away to reveal a sparkling purple and silver bikini top. The crowd leap to their feet.
Where is she?
Rhythmically moving her hips, she begins to undo the bottom half of the dress. Albert stands up in his chair.
Look at that. Here, Harold, you're missing it. Come on, get up here. Get down, stop it, disgusting. Get him off!
Harold grabs at him, but he falls forward.
Come on, hold tight, what's the matter? Get up behind us.
Where's Mr.?
Both lenses are shattered.
Will you come on?
Harold lifts him off the floor. Zita smiles widely as she leans in to retrieve her boa from around the neck of the earlier recipient. Turning sharply, her eyes take on a look of steely focus. She moves further up the aisle, and as two men move out of the way, she stands directly in front of Harold. He smiles nervously as she gyrates in front of him before sliding onto his knee. Removing a small piece of paper from her top, she holds it out to him, and he gratefully takes it from her. He closes his eyes as she runs her red fingernailed hand down his face, then removing the strap around her neck, she turns her back to him and indicates for him to undo her bikini. He peers down as he fiddles with it, his father urging him on. Her top drops off, and now with the feathers barely covering her, she stands and sashes back down the aisle. The man in the white t-shirt makes a grab for her. Harold leaps to his feet defensively. She simply sidesteps the good-natured advance and moves back up the stairs to the stage. She now begins to remove her sparkling underwear, unclipping it at the side. Albert's face twitches involuntarily. As she slowly peels him away, he sticks his broken glasses in his mouth, hastily removing them. With a kick of her leg, she flicks off the small undergarments, then stealthily runs up the stairs to exit as the room erupts to its feet. Smiling contentedly to himself, still holding the purple bra, Harold unfolds Zita's note.
What's that?
It's just a note.
Where'd you get it?
God blimey, you got a bigger note than Cyrano Bergerac, you have.
Who's it from? What's it say?
If you must know, the stripper has requested the pleasure of my company in the bar for a drink afterwards.
Get out of it.
Please yourself.
You mean, you've pulled her?
Well, looks like it, don't it? Not often you're right, is it? And you're wrong again.
Yeah, good. Ta-da, see you later.
As Harold scampers off, Albert watches him, then studies the note closely. Now in the bar, Harold adjusts his tie as he sits alone on a stool. His father appears at the doorway, creeping up behind him, smirking.
She's not here, is she? She's blown you out. I knew she would.
God almighty, do you have to follow me everywhere I go? Can't you leave me alone for 5 minutes? Every time I look round, you're there. You're worse than a fly around a cow's arsehole.
Well, it's a public bar. I can come in here if I like.
All right, then. Get up that end, then.
I don't want to get up that end.
Well, I got that end. You stay down here.
As he walks away, his father follows closely behind.
Yeah. She's not coming anyway. She's been taking them, Mickey.
Zita suddenly appears through a side door.
Hello.
Her blonde wig from the show is replaced by long auburn locks. He ushers her to a table, then pulls out a seat for her to sit on.
Can I get you anything?
Gin and tonic, please.
Stuart? One large gin and tonic and a vodka martini.
Shh! Oi!
And half a bit for him.
Oh, there's always one, isn't there?
That's my father.
Oh, I'm sorry, I didn't realise. He bears no resemblance to you.
Oh, thank God for that. I take after my mother. She was a very lovely woman. Not that I'm suggesting I inherited her looks. I wouldn't want you to think I'm vain. Most times, I don't look much at all.
Oh, I think you're a very attractive man.
So, yeah?
Beautiful eyes.
Well, yeah, of course that's... Do you mind if I smoke?
Not at all.
Shaking nervously, he pulls a cigarette from a packet, sticks it in his mouth and lights it.
Oh, do apologise. Would you care for them?
No, thanks. I'm trying to give them up.
Oh, so am I. It is a filthy habit.
She smiles as he hurriedly stubs it out.
I think you're the most attractive man here.
Oh, well, we wouldn't say that.
He lights another cigarette.
One or two other good-looking boys here. You probably couldn't see, you know, the lights in there. Centre half's a very good-looking fella.
Not for me. It's funny with me. I can tell as soon as I walk into a room who it is.
Who it is?
For me.
He looks dumbstruck.
Can I get you another drink?
Oh, I haven't had the first one yet.
Yeah?
The barman places down their drinks. Harold pays him.
Ciao.
Zita sips her gin and tonic as Harold gulps down his martini.
How long have you been...
taking my clothes off in public?
Well, no, I wouldn't put it that way.
Well, they all ask that. How long, what for? Do you enjoy it?
I'm sure you must hate it, and all those men looking at you.
Oh, no, I love it, actually. It gives you a great sense of power. But if you've got a nice body, why not show it off?
Well, quite, quite.
Did you like my body?
Yes. Yes, I did, actually. I thought you had a nice shape.
A drag queen enters.
Hello, Zita.
Hello, Arthur.
I think I'll just have a quick one before I go on. Yeah, a bevy, that is. All right, dear, I can take a hint.
Harold smiles as Arthur walks off. An oblivious Albert spots him, a leering grin forming on his face.
Yes, sir.
Small sherry, please, darling.
Have you got Bristol Cray?
What am I supposed to do with that? Drink it or rub it in?
No.
Would you care for a stool, miss?
Oh, thank you very much, love.
Ooh, this bloody girdle's killing me.
There we are, darling.
No, I'll do that. I mean that.
Aren't you watching the show, then?
Oh, yeah, I've been watching it. Hey, how about coming in here and having a drink with me after?
That's very kind of you. Yes, I'd like to.
He raises his half pint.
Cheers.
Can I get you another drink?
No. I'd like to go now.
Perhaps I may see you again sometime.
Aren't you going to take me home?
Oh, yes, of course. I'll just check with my dad. Otherwise, he might look up and I won't be able to get in. Well, it's not so much that he locks me out as he locks himself in. I mean, I can't stay out if I want to, but...
Come on, let's ask your dad.
They walk over to a grinning Albert and Arthur.
I'll see you later. Cheeky.
All right, then.
Dad,
I just pulled her mate. The other one. We're having a drink together aft.
But the one who just...
Yeah, I think she fancies me.
Oh, but that wasn't...
Oh, yes. Oh, congratulations. Oh, you have done well there, Dad. I'm just taking Zita home. I might be a bit late.
You carry on. Don't worry about me. I'll be all right.
Well, don't lock me out.
Yeah, don't you worry. I might be like myself, mate. Here you. You better take the key.
Night.
They leave him gurning to himself in satisfaction. Next morning, a black taxi pulls up outside the Steptoe's yard. Harold gets out, pays the driver, then turning back throws him a tip. He waltzes through the gate into the yard, throwing his arms out and jumping off his toes. He stops the marble effect statue and places his hands on it.
The lark's on the wing, the morning's dew pearl. Oh, God's in his heaven. All's well with the world.
He moves to look at himself in a mirror. Noticing lipstick on his mouth, he wipes it off with a handkerchief. Turning away, he skips up to his front door. Looking around for the source of the noise, he spies a ramshackle corrugated roofed shed. A mischievous glint in his eyes, he runs across the yard towards it. Opening the door, he finds his father curled up atop a bale of hay, his backside sticking out. Kneeling down beside the snoring bundle, he picks up a long piece of straw. Carefully, he feeds it through a small hole in the back of the old man's grubby long johns before suddenly shaking it about.
What's that? Who's there? Get out! Oh, it's you. Thank God. Where the blinker have you been?
You know very well where I've been.
What? Tennis time?
Yeah. What's it got to do with you?
You want to stay out all night? You can find a place alone.
Find a place of my own? I won't have to stay out all night.
I've been sitting up here waiting for you since 1 o'clock in the morning.
You could have waited in the house.
I couldn't get in, could I? You got the key.
I'll put your teeth in and get a breakfast done.
He fishes his false teeth out of a bucket.
You dirty old man. The horse has got a drink out of that. If that horse's teeth starts falling out, I'm holding you personally responsible.
The eggs at the shed.
By the way, how'd you get on with that girl last night?
It wasn't a bleeding girl, was it?
Not a girl, not really.
You knew bloody well it wasn't. It was a fella.
No! Oh, you're joking. Oh, dear, what a surprise. My dad going out to dinner with a transvestite. You're not turning ginger, are you? You'll be kicked out of the Tory party.
Yeah.
Oh, I don't know, though.
Yeah.
Oh, at least you had a good night's sleep.
Harold unlocks the front door and the two men walk through to their kitchen.
Bleeding birds have got the cream again.
Harold yawns and opens a newspaper as he leans up against the fridge. Albert picks up a blackened frying pan and empties the greasy remnants of bacon and eggs into the sink. He then swings open the fridge door directly onto his son's knees. Harold limps over to the kitchen table and takes a seat while his father places the frying pan onto the hob and strikes a match to light it. Grabbing a handful of sausages, he dumps them into the pan along with a slab of bacon. Watching on, Harold rolls his eyes and shivers. Albert moves over to the kitchen table and, reaching down, opens a drawer directly into Harold's groin. Harold gets up slowly and clenches his fist behind his oblivious aggressor. Propping himself up beside the cooker, Harold attempts to read the paper once again. Albert peers over his shoulder to sneak a look. Exasperated, he shuts the paper.
Anything in the paper?
No, nothing.
There must be something.
Oh, God. Edward Heath marries Ella Fitzgerald.
Liar.
Enoch Powell, best man.
Liar. Show me.
At a secret ceremony performed last night by the Archbishop of Canterbury, the Right Honourable Edward Heath married American jazz singer Ella Fitzgerald.
Where? Where?
The matching couple wore diamanted trousers suits today. That got you going, didn't it?
You're in a good mood this morning. Making little jokes. Singing.
I must say, I'm reasonably content with the world.
Yeah.
Oh, it's good to be alive, Dad. Oh, what a bird, Dad.
Yeah, I must admit she wasn't bad looking. Better than the usual scrubbers you get landed with. I didn't know you had it in you, pulling a bird like that.
a fatal attraction on both our parts, Dad. There was nothing she could do about it. No more could I. It's chemistry, Dad. Our chemicals mixed.
I wonder who she'll be mixing her chemicals with tonight.
Well, that's where you're wrong, see? Because I shall be in the driving seat again tonight. I'm picking her up at 11 o'clock. No. She's in love with me, Dad. She thinks the sun shines out of my ear holes.
Well, I'm very pleased for you, son. It'll do you good. Keep it going for as long as you can.
I intend to. We're engaged.
Eh?
We're engaged. To be married.
You bloody fool.
Harold nervously looks down.
What's wrong with getting married?
Nothing to a decent girl, but not one like her. She's a stripper.
What's that got to do with it?
They're not for marrying, they're for looking at.
Oh, come on, you said to yourself. And keep it going as long as you can.
Oh, I didn't mean marry her. I meant give her one now and again. A bit on the side. I don't mind a hat.
I don't want her as a bit on the side. I'm going to marry her. In church. Properly.
Over my dead body.
If necessary. The vicar's going to be a bit confused, but that's up to him. I love her, Dad.
No, for God's sake, grow up. Honestly, you didn't ought to be allowed out. You meet a bird, she undoes her bra, waggles her bristles at you, and you're in love.
Yes, love! So you can get stuffed for a start.
He brandishes a sausage atop a fork in his father's face.
Harold! Harold! Son! Be sensible. I know you've always wanted to get married, but you mustn't rush into it.
Rush into it? I'm 39!
Exactly. The dangerous age. Lonely. Vulnerable. Ready to fall for the first old slag that fancies you.
Father, I would prefer it if you would not refer to my fiancée as an old slag. She's a very lovely girl.
But you don't know her. How can you be sure you're in love with her when you only met her last night?
Was it only last night? That seems like a lifetime.
Oh, my God.
How long did Romeo know Juliet?
I don't care about other people. I only care about you. Harold. Harold, you were flattered. Young bird like her, old bloke like you, over the hump.
Thank you very much.
I've seen it all before.
Dad, it was real. We talked right into the morning, and we realised that we were both lonely people. And until we met, our lives was completely empty.
Harold, I'm only thinking of you. What's going to happen to me?
You didn't think about me for long, did you? That's all you're really worried about, isn't it?
I'm not going into an old people's home. I'll kill myself first.
Don't worry. No one's going to make you go into an home. You can stay here with us.
Here? You're not bringing her home here. I'm not having that.
Oh. Well, you've got three choices. You can stay with us, go into a home, or kill yourself.
You callous little bleeder.
Well, you made me sick. I mean, you ought to be grateful she's prepared to take you on.
Oh, so you discussed it then?
Well, of course. It's the first thing I told her. We come as a pair, like bookends. Dante and Isolde. Norcomen. Love me. Love my dad. That's why it's always been, isn't it?
Well, she don't seem the sort of bird that'll be happy looking after me.
Only a bleeding nun would be happy doing that. Why don't get married?
The wedding day.
Bleeding limousine. What does he want to be in the limousine for?
Harold charges up the stairs. Hearing this, Albert scampers over to a mirror.
Dad, hurry up, the car's here.
Tell it to wait.
You're doing this deliberately, aren't you?
I can't do up me collar, Dad.
Harold grabs him roughly by the collar.
You're hurting me.
3 hours you have taken to get ready. You're deliberately trying to make me late, aren't you?
You might thank me one day.
He rams the knot of his tie up.
If you're not ready in 2 minutes, we're going without you.
Albert loosens his tie. Harold frantically runs down the stairs. A chauffeur lies on the sofa, a pint of beer in his hand.
Your phone's ringing.
Hello!
Hello, Harold, is that you?
Hello, Mother.
Don't your mother
Mrs. Smith, then? Yes, yes, we're just leaving. We're on the way. This is, I know I'm late, but... The quicker I get off the phone, the quicker I'm going to get there.
Don't you be so rude to me after all.
Didn't mean to sound rude.
And do you know that your father called me a silly bitch?
My father called you a what?
A silly bitch.
Oh, you please, I'm most terribly sorry, but you mustn't take any notice of him. He's just a little bit senile. Yes, he's what, we're just leaving.
Do you mean to say that my daughter...
See you in church.
...into a family that's senile? Senile?
Give my love to Zita.
Give your love to Zita?
Mrs. Smith, please.
My poor girl's
please don't cry. No, but shush, please don't cry. My mother-in-law.
Look, I've got another wedding at 2:30. You wouldn't rather go there, would you?
Look, you! Just go and get the motor running. I'll go and get my dad.
Turning, he clatters into a skeleton hanging from the roof. Rushing back upstairs, he finds Albert sitting on his bed, a forlorn look on his face.
That was Mrs. Smith on the phone. Will you get out?
I'm sorry, Harold. You'll have to go without me.
Well, what is it now?
I can't do up my cufflinks.
Then put them on the car.
Grabbing him by the hand, Harold makes the door, then spins him back round.
I got the ring. Have you washed your neck?
Yeah.
You haven't shaved. It's too late now. I told you to put in a clean hanky.
Harold swipes the handkerchief from his top pocket.
What was that?
What?
Then.
When?
I reached over, took her handkerchief out of her pocket, and something flew out the window.
Albert's eyes widen.
Oh, dear.
What?
It must have been the ring.
The two men look at each other, then rush to the window, sticking their heads out. A black wedding car speeds down a tree-lined street. Zita sits in the back seat. It drives up onto the curb and U-turns to pull up in front of a church. The occupants of the car open the doors to get out, but are ushered back in again by a vicar. As the car races off, the vicar checks his watch. Back at the Steptoe's yard, a dustbin lid is thrown up in the air from behind a large pile of scrap metal and other junk. Harold hurls a car exhaust over another heap, which is quickly flung back towards him.
Where are you?
Your phone's ringing.
Let the bleeding thing ring!
Hang on. I think I found it.
Where?
Here. Here it is.
Harold takes it from him and cleans it with his handkerchief.
Does that look the sort of thing I would put upon my wife's finger? That's a brass tap washer.
Might it do. She wouldn't have noticed the difference. It's dark in them churches.
Hang on. Now, when the ring landed, did you hear a noise?
Come to think of it, no, I didn't. It must have fallen in something soft.
Wait a minute. There's the window. Now follow the trajectory through. What is soft?
Their faces simultaneously drop as they look over to see the steaming pile of horse manure. Zita's wedding car pulls up at the church, but once again is waved off around the block by the vicar and Zita's mother. In full wedding attire, Harold stands ankle deep in the manure. He holds a sieve and rubs the muck through it with his hands as his father shovels more in with a garden fork.
Just like gold mining, isn't it?
Hang on! I found it!
Gleefully, the two men run to the car. Harold runs back and grabs his suit jacket.
Come on! Don't stop for nothing!
The chauffeur screws up his face at the smell emanating from them. The car speeds off out of the Steptoe's yard.
Hurry! Faster!
As it hurtles towards a fork in the road, they almost collide with Zita's car, which is forced to the side, crashing into a pile of cardboard boxes. Zita and her father are flung around at the impact. Wearing an orange hat, brown shawl and patterned dress, Zita's mother walks outside the church. Harold's car screeches to a halt.
Hey, mind the door!
As the two men leap out and run past, she sniffs the air, then looks over her shoulder at them in shock. Father and son charge into the church, stopping suddenly at the top of the aisle. The church is empty except for two men seated halfway down the right-hand side. Harold unbuttons his jacket, then bowing slightly, makes his way forward. Albert crosses himself before following on behind. Mrs. Smith turns up her nose and waves a handkerchief in front of her face as she walks in their wake.
Oh, I know what the
they mean by our church.
Albert and Zita's mother take their seats on opposite sides of the church. Harold stands in the aisle and moves towards her, unsure of where to sit. The vicar gestures towards his father and he slides into the pew beside him. Both men clasp their hands and close their eyes as if praying. The vicar turns round, sniffing the air. Realising where the stench is coming from, he gestures to an altar boy who walks forward swinging a smoking thurible to help cleanse the air around.
I'll give it 6 months.
Shut your face.
The vicar looks at them sternly.
I see we're having hymn number 389. Fight the good fight. Very apt.
I'm all worked out of you, and the first thing we'll have in here today is extreme unction.
Oh, well, I'm finished. I've done all I can. It's up to you now. I'll say no more.
Thank you, God.
She's not here yet, is she? She's changed her mind. She's blown you out.
They look chastened by the vicar's rebuke. Zita's limousine draws up at the side of a leaf-strewn kerb outside the church. A man gestures to the vicar that the bride has arrived. He nods and walks over to Harold.
Mr. Stepton, bride has just arrived. Perhaps you and your best man would take your positions just over here, please.
Well, here we go. Into the valley of death.
This is God's house. Aren't you frightened of being struck by lightning?
The bride and her father rush in, stopping at the top of the aisle. The vicar looks up and smiles as they link arms and begin their walk forward.
You wonder she's not taking her clothes off.
He strikes his father in a delicate area. The old man screws up his face as the vicar looks on contemptuously. Zita's mother looks round at her approaching daughter. Harold quivers uncontrollably as his bride advances behind him. Their eyes meet and he manages a nervous smile. Her teeth shine brightly as she beams at him. Her smile fades quickly as she sniffs the air around her betrothed.
Dearly beloved, we are gathered together here in the sight of God and in the face of this congregation to join together this man and this woman in holy matrimony, into which holy estate these two persons now come to be joined.
In a hazy sky, a jumbo jet roars overhead, coming into land, throwing up dust as its wheels skid on the runway. Peaceful blue sea rolls into a bay. Grey buildings are dotted around the edge near sandy beaches. A woman in a pink flamenco dress pours champagne into wide wine glasses on a tray in a hotel lobby. Above her, the legs of a painter balancing on a plank of wood between two stepladders. A group of tourists enter. A dark-suited porter rushes to greet them. Watching on, a brown-haired man with a bushy handlebar moustache rolls his eyes, then smiling, rises from his seat and walks purposefully over to them.
Ladies and gentlemen. On behalf of Packwell Honeymoon Tours, may I welcome you all to the Miramar Hotel, which, as you can see, is nearly finished. Costa Brava, Spain. That's just in case some of you don't know where you are. Now, if you'd like to drink up your champagne quickly, hand in your passports to the desk. It's all right. You can sign in later. Pick up your keys, identify your baggage. You can all go up to your rooms and change. Clothes, that is, not passports. And last but not least, I hope you all have a wonderful honeymoon. Thank you.
Welcome to the Hotel Miramar. Are those your bags
over there?
Yes.
Thank you. Oh, come on, hurry up.
I'll leave off. It was your fault we missed the bus.
But we wouldn't have missed the bus if you hadn't shouted. Gibraltar is British as we got off at the airport. Half an hour in the customs trying to explain in Spanish that you was local, motto local.
I knew we should have gone to Bognor. They speak English there.
You're never satisfied, are you? You hasn't stopped moaning since we left the airport. Nobody else brought their father on honeymoon.
I knew I wouldn't like it here. It's too hot.
And take your overcoat off then. That silly hat.
Zita?
Hello, Terry.
Hello, Zita. What brought you here?
I hope.
Oh, this is my husband, Harold.
How do you do?
Well, you're a very lucky man. I never thought anybody would trap our Zita. You must have something we haven't got. Oh, sir, what party are you with?
I'm with him.
With my father.
On your honeymoon? Do forgive me, sir. Welcome to Spain. Now, if you're feeling lonely, I'm sure there are lots of things we can find for you to do while the happy couple are on their own. Hmm? If you'll forgive me, I'll see you later.
Terry rolls his eyes towards Harold and his father.
Who is that?
Just a fellow I used to know.
Yeah, I could see that.
I used to work with him. He was a comic.
He didn't make me laugh.
Yeah, well, he must have turned it in and taken out this job.
Good-looking boy, isn't he?
Yeah, he's all right, if you like that sort of thing. Oh, come on, let's get signed in. I must have a wash.
Hey, I want to watch him, mate. You turn your back, he'll be in there. Like a ferret down a rabbit hole.
Disgusting.
This
Elevator doors slide open. A porter exits into a corridor, followed by a smiling Harold and Zita. He shows them into their room as Albert lurks in the background. Beaming, they rush through and straight out onto a balcony, leaning over the edge to admire their view. Still in his overcoat, Albert shuffles along the passageway. He ignores them and walks into Harold's room.
I still think we ought to have gone to Bognor. The waste of money coming all this way. I'm not gonna like it here. It's too hot. I'm sweating already.
Harold forcibly marches him by the arm to an adjacent room, tipping the porter as he closes the door behind the old man. Re-entering his own room, Harold moves to shut his door, but there is not one there.
Senor?
Ah, si, senor.
Door out. Door out.
Another man appears with a wooden door.
Senor?
Harold tips the porter again.
Gracias, senor.
Senor? Harold swings the newly hung door back and forward. Grudgingly, he tips the second man who closes the door behind him. Finally alone, Zita and Harold face each other and move to kiss.
Here, this is Andy, isn't it? Come on, hurry up, I'm hungry.
Zita storms to the bathroom.
Coming!
Two men breeze into the room. One carries a tool bag, the other a blue porcelain toilet. They enter the bathroom and shut the door. Stunned, Harold walks over to the door as Zita exits. A woman dances flamenco while a guitarist strums the tune. Harold, Zita and Albert sit in the empty hotel restaurant. The unhappy couple look on as Albert greedily gobbles away at a plate of lobster.
Sub this for a lark. Can't fight her.
The performers leave, switching a light off. Albert contorts his face as he sucks in a lobster leg. Harold watches on and looks at Zita, who gazes down at the table. A waiter sorts dishes at the side.
Goodness me, I'm tired. I think I'll turn in. Oh, you can't get any more out of it.
There's more meat in the claws. There's more meat in the claws. There's more meat in the claws. Must have wasted. Come on.
All the others went up hours ago.
Half of them never come down.
I'm going.
No, you can't leave me here. Not with this lot. I can't even speak lingo.
But hurry up, then.
I haven't had me pudding yet.
Neither have I, mate. Sorry, dear. You go on, huh?
Yeah, well, all right. Well, don't be long.
I won't.
Good night, Father.
He rips the claw in half.
Sleep well.
Standing, they kiss tenderly. Albert screws his face up. Zita walks to the exit. In the darkness, she turns and looks back at Harold. He looks longingly to her as he retakes his seat.
Very nice. Very good 4 quid's worth, that was. I haven't had lobster since the 1418 war.
You couldn't have steak and chips like everyone else, could
you? Nah, I'm on holiday. You can get steak and chips at home, can't you?
You've finished now, have you? Good. Come on, then we'll go up.
Do you fancy a walk round the town?
No, I don't.
Bit early to go to bed, ain't it?
Not for me.
Oh, well. I suppose I can just have a bit of a read.
Oh, thank God for that.
Come on. Muchas gracias. Oh, buenas noches, señor.
Here, I can't see.
And feel.
I am feeling.
Oh! What was that?
I don't know, I can't see. Oh, my God!
Harold rubs his white loafer on a red carpet as they enter the corridor leading to their respective rooms. He smiles as he approaches his door. Albert stops beside him.
Good night, Dad.
He half opens his door. He looks at his father, who beckons him back and mouths the words, "Close the door."
Look, son, I know I should have told you this before. I know I've left it a bit late, but...
25 years, to be precise. Good night.
Have you got everything?
Everything I need.
Thank you.
Well, good luck, son.
Thank you.
Finally, Harold enters his room, closing the door behind his father. The old lech suddenly scrambles to his own door, frantically using his key to open it. In his room, Harold picks up a golden soda fountain from a tray. Albert moves straight for the adjoining door between their rooms. Carefully removing the key from the lock, he bends down to peer through the keyhole.
I'm blinded! I'm blinded!
Using the soda fountain, he scores a direct hit in his father's eye, then hangs his jacket over the handle of the door. He walks over to the balcony. Albert now picks a glass from a silver tray and creeps over to the door, placing the receptacle against the wood and pressing his ear against it. The bathroom door slides open and Zita stands resplendent in a full-length, low-cut pink nightdress. Harold looks at her lovingly as she reciprocates. She floats over to between their single beds and places something on the bedside cabinet. Their eyes stay fixed on each other as, moving slowly, she glides over to the window where Harold stands, a look of nervous anticipation sweeping over him.
Inches of wall between him and us.
I'll make it up to you.
Their lips meet and they kiss softly. He leans forward and begins to kiss her neck.
Come on then.
Moving to face her, they kiss again, this time passionately, arms wrapped around each other. Harold's eyes open, but they continue their clinch.
What's happened?
Daddy's killed himself.
I could never be that lucky.
Resuming proceedings, Harold holds her tightly while moving towards his bed.
Would you excuse me, darling? I'll go and see what's wrong.
He drops her onto the bed.
Dad? Dad, are you all right? What is it? What's wrong?
Help me. Fetch a doctor. Fetch a doctor. I'm ill. I'm in agony. I'm dying.
Where is it? Where is it hurt?
The guts. They're on fire.
Oh, hang on, Dad. Try not to move. I'll get help.
What's wrong with him now?
He's sick.
Yeah, so am I.
No, seriously. He's not kidding. He's ill. Look at him. He's gone green.
The old man's face contorts as he lies curled up on his bed. They move over to him. Zita places her hand on his brow.
He's got a fever.
Fungi. Help me.
Harold, ring a doctor.
Hello? 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 Ablin English, eh? Medico. Yeah, medico. Mexico. Medic. Oh, thank God. Oh, a doctor. Yeah, room 57. Quickly.
Harold looks over the quivering curmudgeon.
So help me, if you're having me on, tomorrow morning there will be a corner of a foreign field that is forever England.
Don't worry, love. He'll be all right.
Doctor!
Yes?
How is he, Doctor?
He's resting. I've given him an injection.
Oh, what's wrong with him?
He's got food poisoning.
Food poisoning?
Food poisoning.
In his room, Albert lies propped up in his bed asleep. Harold enters.
Harold? I'm here, Dad. You're going to be all right, Dad.
I want to go home.
We've only just got here, Dad.
I want to go home. I don't want to die over here.
You're not going to die, Dad.
Please, Harold, take me home.
I'm on my honeymoon, Dad. You're going to be all right in a couple of days. The doctor says so.
I don't trust them wog doctors. Don't know what they're doing. Wogs. I want to see my own doctor.
But your doctor's a Pakistani.
Well, he counts as British.
Look, Dad, they've done all they can.
Got needles like telegraph poles. I want to go.
Dad, it is the height of the season. You can't just get tickets like that.
I don't like it here. I want to go home. I'm frightened. I want to go home now. Tonight.
It's all right. All right. Now, calm down, calm down. Don't get excited. I'll see what I can do.
Promise.
Yes, I promise. Come on, come on. Try and get some rest.
He He lays his father back down and leaves him whimpering to himself. An empty airport departure lounge. Harold and Zita sit with Albert, who lays eyes closed on a stretcher. A dark-suited airport official approaches.
You're in luck. It wasn't easy, but I managed it. Two seats on the next plane back to London.
Oh, that is good of you. Two?
So we've got. We're full up.
But it's three of us.
I'm sorry, sir. It's the best I can do. You only got those because two blokes were killed in a car crash.
Look, couldn't you squeeze another one in?
I'm sorry, sir.
Look, he's only a little bloke. Couldn't he sit on my lap?
Don't be silly, sir.
What about the lavatory? Bung him in there. We spend most of the flight in there anyway.
I'd like to help, sir, but it's impossible.
When will there be a seat?
Well, I don't know. Maybe tomorrow, maybe the end of the week. We'll put you on the first available flight. I'll get you cleared through.
Dad, couldn't you wait until we can all go back together?
Well, come on, make up your mind. What are we doing, going or staying?
He looks at Zita, down to his father, then back at her.
He said there might be a seat tomorrow. That's not too bad, is it? It's a nice hotel and you've got plenty of money. It's not as if you'd be stuck here forever.
Right, that's all I wanted to know.
I mean, what else can I do? You've got to be all right, aren't you?
Well, don't worry about me.
Frostily, she takes her bags.
Come on, sir, you don't want to miss it, do you?
No.
This is the final call for passengers. I'll see you when I see you. Go on.
Zita watches as Harold wheels Albert towards the departure gate. He looks back as Terry approaches behind her. His eyes widen angrily and he knocks the stretcher into a door frame.
Ah! You clumsy great pillock!
Have a good trip. And don't worry, Squire. I'll look after her.
Seething, Harold turns and repeatedly rams the stretcher against the door. Terry takes Zita by the arm.
Oh, get me out of here. Get me to bed. Oh.
Harold looks on as Zita is ushered from the airport by the moustached Lothario. A jumbo jet rises into a deep orange sky. Back at the Steptoe's yard, rain pours down outside. Inside, Harold watches and rolls his eyes as Albert cuts up a piece of chicken and greedily stuffs it into his mouth, skin and all.
The pulse is light, isn't it?
And?
Said the afternoon pulse is light, isn't it?
You're not expecting to hear anything, are you?
Of course I am.
Yeah. One postcard you've had from her in 10 days, and that was over a week ago. She's blown you out, mate. She's not coming back.
Of course she's coming back. She's just having trouble getting a plane, that's all.
She could have walked on me now.
Look, it's very difficult to get flights at this time of the year when a man says so.
He didn't have any trouble getting us out, did he? You won't see her again. She's on the nest with old Oily.
Hasn't taken you long to get better, has it?
Nah.
Post! It's a post! It's a post!
He grabs the pile of letters and postcards and joyously waves them in the air.
They must have been held up. It's kept them in order. The 4th, 6th, and the 8th.
Sitting down beside a fire.
My dearest Harold. How are you? I'm very well, but missing you terribly.
Yeah.
Weather's marvellous. Still no sign of a plane, but everybody's been very kind and helpful. Terry took me to Barcelona yesterday.
Hello.
The manager also has been very sweet. He sent his regards to your father. How is he, by the way? I can't wait to see you again, my darling. Your ever-loving Zita. Satisfied? Let's run up the climber for you.
Yeah.
My dearest Harold, still no sign of a plane. Thank you for your 12-page letter, which I received yesterday. We'll write soon. Must fly. I'm going on a day trip to Madrid with Terry and a few others. Love, Zita. Dear Harold.
What happened to dearest Harold?
Well, you can't be lovey-dovey all the time, can you?
No, I suppose not. Not when you've been married as long as you have.
Oh, you vicious little sod. I wasn't that lobster that poisoned you. You swallowed your own venom.
Now get on with it.
Dear Harold.
Dear Harold, I received another long letter from you yesterday. Terry sends his regards, writing to you, Zita.
They're getting shorter, aren't they?
Oh, she's saving it all up for the letter. It's all in here, mate.
Smiling nervously, Russell's opened the letter.
Dear Harold, I don't know how to begin writing this letter to you.
His face slowly drops as he reads on. Albert's face takes on a concerned expression as he looks over at him. Harold turns over the paper and continues reading. Albert looks mournful. As he finishes reading, his bottom lip begins to quiver. His father watches on as he rises, moves over to where bottles of spirits hang from a set of optics and deposits a drink into a glass. Albert stands and walks over to him.
No, son. No, don't do that. That don't do no good.
Don't you start feeling sorry now. That's what you've always worked for, isn't it? What you've always wanted.
I didn't do anything.
You didn't have to. It was there. You're always there. We'd have been all right on our own.
I wasn't there when she ran off with the bloke.
Neither was I, was I? I was sitting at home nursing you. What a laugh. The cuckolding. My own expense.
What are you going to do about it?
What can I do about it?
Go out there and thump a one.
Oh, yes, I can afford to go flying round Europe on my income, can't I?
Now, take my advice, son. Forget all about it. We don't need anybody else here. We can manage on our own.
You take my advice. Go up to your room.
Yeah?
Lock the door. And keep out of my way for the next 5 years. You understand? What? Go on. Go on.
Go on!
The old man scuttles away. Harold picks up his glass, then smashes it down. He looks at his wedding photo.
Why did you have to do it to me?
I'll smash a bleeding face in when I see it.
Harold rides alone on the horse and cart along a London street. He looks on as he passes a church where a bride and groom are having their photos taken outside, his face sorrowful. Turning a corner out of a side street, he pulls on the reins and stops Delilah outside a block of high-rise flats. He jumps down onto the road and, taking off a flat cap, combs his hair. He walks through the entrance to the concrete behemoth rising up into the blue sky. Now in a yellow-tiled corridor, he walks up to a door and rings the bell. The door slams in his face. He trudges off along the passageway again, stopping briefly to look out of the windows. Taking a deep breath, he approaches yet another flat. The door is opened by a familiar, fresh-faced, dark-haired man.
Yes? Good afternoon. I banged my card through your box yesterday.
Did you? A bit cheeky of you, wasn't it?
Steptoe and Son, scrap metal merchants, rag and bone antiques, objets, darts, furniture, anything. Best price is given. We is very competitive.
Well, darling, the only rags I've got are the ones I'm standing up in.
I see. Sorry I bothered you.
No, don't go. Why don't you come in? I might be able to find something for you.
Don't think I'll bother, thank you.
Here, wait a minute. Aren't you the bloke that married Zita?
How did you know?
Well, I was there, darling, wasn't I? On the night.
Yeah, I remember you now. You was a drag act.
Female impersonator, dear, if you don't mind. Oh, but I'm sorry about you two. Didn't last long, did it? Mind you, I know just how you feel. Mine's broken up as well. Ooh, a rotten swine she was. Do you know, took my record player, half the bed linen, my Butch Cassidy poster.
How did you know we'd broken up?
Well, she told me, didn't she?
She told you? When?
Well, I see her every week, don't I? To all my green shields down.
A fierce-looking expression on his face, Harold rushes along a city street. He stops outside a house, number 147. His lip curls as he produces a piece of lead piping from his pocket and bounds up the stairs. He stands to the side of the door, which is opened by Zita. Rushing in, Harold runs straight past her and up the stairs. Zita calmly shuts the door over. She wears a blue tunic dress and is overtly pregnant. Harold appears at the top of the stairs, brandishing his weapon.
Where is he?
Where's who?
What do you mean, where's who? Him! That flesh bastard you ran off with!
Oh, him? But I don't know, I haven't seen him.
Lying! You're lying! You're up to duff.
Well, I haven't been eating new bread. Do you want a cup of tea?
Yeah, thank you.
He looks shocked. She enters a brightly lit kitchen and picks up a yellow teapot. A stunned Harold appears and sits at a table.
I didn't know.
There's no reason why you should. How'd you find me?
Huh? It was Arthur, through the drag act. I met him.
I'm sorry, Harold.
Yeah?
I didn't want it to happen.
No.
But I didn't jump into bed as soon as your plane took off, you know.
Oh, of course not.
I held out for 3 days.
Oh, good. I am flattered.
Look, it wouldn't have happened if you'd been there.
And it wouldn't have happened if you'd have come home.
I couldn't get a plane.
Yeah, I'm sure you both tried very hard.
Look, you left me on my honeymoon for your father.
He was very ill.
Oh, come on. Don't let's go over all that again.
She sets down the pot of tea and takes a seat. He looks away.
How many sugars?
Two, please. Cigarette?
I shouldn't really. It's bad for the baby. I'm dying for one, actually.
Well, have one, for God's sake. One won't hurt.
Gratefully, she takes one. Producing a box of matches, he lights it for her.
You on your own?
How long has he been gone?
Since you found out about this.
That's typical, isn't it? Look, a bloke's wife, put her in the club, then up and away. I knew it was a shit room.
Isn't it?
Tanuda? Whose is it?
She looks at him seriously.
That's not mine.
She glances down.
Can't be.
Her eyes rise up again. Visibly troubled, he rises, turns to the door, then paces round the kitchen, looking over at her.
Why didn't you tell me?
I didn't think you'd want to know, after what happened.
I'm not like him. He's mine. I had a right to know. You should have told me. You shouldn't be smoking, either.
Taking the cigarette from her, he stubs it out, then walks past and stands behind her, facing away.
When's it due?
5 weeks.
He counts on his fingers.
Last February.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be a father.
Joyfully, he turns and sits down again, facing her.
Zita, let's make a fresh start. Let's give it another try.
Look, it wouldn't work, Harold. I mean, every time I had a ride, I'd chuck it in my face.
No, I wouldn't. I promise. I'll still love you. But what's gone's gone. I can't live in the past. It's the future that's important. I'm not a man for bearing grudges. So what you did was diabolical. Then it's all forgotten now.
Sounds like it.
Look, let's start again. As though nothing's happened. Oh, come home with me, Zita. For the kid's sake. I want no kid. I've never had one before. I don't want you.
Are you sure?
I'm sure.
A smile forms in her face.
All right, then. We'll give it a try.
Rising to their feet, they stare at each other, then move to kiss. Harold looks down as Zita's bump gets in the way. They lean forward again and their lips lock warmly. Later, the Steptoe's horse and cart turns into their yard. Harold holds the reins as Zita sits beside him, a grey blanket covering her legs. They look at each other, then Harold stands.
Excuse me.
He jumps down from the cart. Hanging the reins over Delilah, he looks warily towards the house, then helps Zita disembark.
Careful there. Let me tell you what.
You know, he's not going to like this, you know.
Well, it's got nothing to do with him. You're my wife. But if he don't like it, he can pounce off out of it. Come.
We'll see.
Do you talk as if I'm frightened of him or something?
Taking her by the hand, they walk over to the front door. Harold fishes in his pocket for his key.
Home.
He opens the door and they enter.
You better wait here. It's a surprise, that's all. Dad?
He wanders through into the junk-strewn living room. Albert lies on the floor fiddling with an upturned bicycle. Harold stoops over and walks towards him.
Hello, little Dad.
You're late.
Guess who's coming to stay with us?
Nobody.
You won't say that when you find out who it is. Close your eyes.
Oh, my God.
He closes his eyes as Harold trots off. Harold removes his hat and, taking Zita by the hand, leads her in. He removes her fur coat and she places her bag down on a table. Linking arms, they stand expectantly in front of the seated old man.
You can open them now.
Hello, Mr. Steptoe.
Well, 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 look who's here.
See, I knew he'd be pleased.
Albert leaps up.
Get her out of here.
But that...
Get her out of here. I will not have that woman in my house.
Goodbye, Harold.
Who's stay where you are? Ain't you got no charity? Can't you see? She's having a baby.
I bet it's got a moustache.
Shut your filthy mouth. It's my baby.
Oh, my God. You are without doubt the softest touch walking on the face of God's earth. And you needn't think you'll get any money out of him while I'm alive.
Now, you listen to me, old man. I don't need any favours from you.
That's it, tell him.
Or you. I can look after myself. I don't need any man to look after me. I didn't come back here for my benefit. I came back here because I was asked.
Haven't you hurt him enough?
Oh, yes. I've hurt him. But I've only hurt him once. You've been hurting him all his life. Look at him. He's pathetic. He can't even have a pee without asking you.
Oh, no, that's a bit... I can?
You can't.
I can. I can do exactly as I like.
All right, then. Prove it. Leave him. Walk out with me now.
He hesitates.
There's no need to. We could all live here as one big happy family.
You see, you can't.
I can.
You can't. You're a prisoner.
I'm not pleading prisoner.
Don't shout at me.
I will. We do seem to have got off on the wrong foot, don't we? Look, let's all sit down.
I'm not stopping. I can do without all this.
Oh, Zita, you can't go. Think about a baby.
That's what I am thinking about.
But you can't bring it up on your own. It needs a father. All kids need a father's influence.
Do they?
Harold looks to his sneering father.
Right, I'm coming with you.
Oh, no, Harold, look, I don't want you to. It's over, love. It was a mistake coming back. Look, Harold, you're a nice man. It's not your fault, but it won't work.
It will work. I love you.
Oh, Harold, she's right. Here, missus, I'll tell you what I'll do. You go home, have the sprog, we'll have a blood test taken, and if it is, we'll bung you 30, but we can say no more about it. Can't be fairer than that.
Thank you very much.
Hang on, Zita. He'll apologise for that before we leave.
Do me a favour. Get stuffed, will you?
Zita!
Let her go. You don't need her, Harold. Go get her off.
Will you get out of the way?
No, no,
Harold. Get out of the way!
No! Harold!
Zita! Zita! Zita!
He knocks his father to the ground and rushes out of the yard. He points as a red double-decker bus pulls off, Zita aboard it. Albert pulls himself to his feet and shambles forward. Harold looks despondent. Early morning. By the light of an oil lamp, Albert sits polishing one of Harold's gumboots. He marches up and grabs it from him.
I was only cleaning him for you. Going to be a nice morning, isn't it? Be nice out on the round today.
Albert rises and walks over to Harold.
Harold, how much longer is this going on for? You haven't spoken to me for 6 months. It's getting on me weak. I don't think I can stand much more of it.
I thought I'd made it quite clear that any conversation between us in the future should be confined to utilitarian methods. Such as, where's my dinner, get the cart unloaded, how much do you want for this? Other phrases of that ilk. I've no desire for any social intercourse. If you'll excuse me, I've got work to do.
Dejected, Albert looks down. then chases after him.
Well, can I give you a hand or something?
Shh. Rats don't sound like that.
Harold seizes a piece of wood.
It's a baby.
You amaze me.
Well, how'd it get in here then?
I don't know. Has this run away from home?
That baby's been left here, mate. Somebody's had a baby and left it in here. Poor little thing. What sort of place is this for a baby? A stable.
Oh, excuse me, Governor. We brought these to you.
Three shabbily dressed old men enter and lay down three sacks. Albert looks down at the baby, then through a hole in the stable roof where a light flashes brightly in the dark sky. Harold looks up too.
You saw the old maggot. That's a 650 Trident of Stuttgart.
12.5 pounds of assorted clean rags.
Harold hands him some money.
Thank you, sir. Yes.
Oh, gold!
Carefully picking up the baby, Harold looks closely at it. His face suddenly lights up and he bounds out of the stable.
She left him! She left him! It's mine! It's mine!
Carrying the baby under its armpits, Harold runs across the yard, closely followed by Albert. They enter the house and he places the baby delicately down on the table.
Go on, get down. Oh.
He rushes over and rummages through a pile of junk. He picks up a guitar case but quickly discards it before emptying a cardboard box of its contents.
Don't touch him! He's not been inoculated yet!
A green cushion is placed in the box.
Oh, thank you. I'm making a bed. Oh, lovely bed. Come on. Oh, good. Here we are. Oh, yes, yes. He's lovely, isn't he? Hey, my little boy.
How do you know?
Because I look.
How do you know he's your son?
Of course he's mine. Which has the reason, don't it? She's just had one. Same age as him. Yes, of course he's mine. I mean, who else would leave a baby in a place like this? Much, I didn't think even she'd do a thing like that. Abandoning him.
Well, I did. That's why I warned you off.
Looks like me, don't he? Well, at least he ain't got a moustache. Of course it's mine.
Oh, now stop crying. How down, crying. Tell you what, Turkey. I'll put you down in your cot. Nice new cot. Oh, God. And I'll cover you up with your blanket. That's it. And I'll sit and talk about baby. Now, cobblers to you then, cry.
A smart suited Harold enters.
He's ill. Oh, get a doctor for him.
He's not ill, he's just hungry. Tell you what, it's a steak and kidney pudding.
Steak and kidney pudding?
He can't eat steak and kidney pudding, surely.
Well, not one of yours anyway. Well, blimey, it takes me all my time to chew my way through them.
Well, he can have the gravy. I know what I'm doing.
Can't you touch him? I don't want you breathing your dirty little germs all over him. I'll do it,
sir. Not like that. Put your hand down to his bum. Give him a bit of support, for God's sake. Here, I've got his milk ready.
What is that?
It's his bottle.
That is a Guinness bottle.
Well, I rinsed it out.
What's that then?
His tit.
Teat, Father.
I know. I made it myself out of the little finger of one of your old rubber gloves with a hole in the middle. Just right.
Hey, that's a good idea.
Yeah, of course it is. You don't have to tell me anything about bringing up babies. I've done it all before.
Yeah, I'll do it. Yes, it's coming. It's coming, ain't it? Oh, hang on. Yes, it's coming. Yeah, look at that. Look at that.
A decorating brush in hand, Harold removes a poster of Chairman Mao, which adorns a wall, only to uncover two pictures of topless women in sultry poses. He hesitates briefly before pasting over them. Now the baby sits in a hanging weighing scale.
He's put on 13 ounces.
Oh, that's not bad, is it?
He's a big boy. Bigger than you were. Not as big as I was, though.
Oh, of course. Nobody was ever as big as you were.
I was 11 pounds when I was born.
He ain't grown much, has he?
The baby lies awake in a cot. Harold opens his eyes, sits up in bed and yawns. He fumbles to switch on a lamp. Striking a match, he lights a small gas stove, on top of which sits a pot with a small bottle of milk in it. He unlatches the side of the cot and, sliding it down, picks up the baby. Cradling it in his arms, it rests against his chest and bites his nipple.
Hey, watch it, mate. Ain't nothing down there for you. Oh, dear. Have a look at
that. Father and son dip their elbows into the kitchen sink, testing the water temperature.
Right. Come on, little father. Up again.
There we go.
No,
not that way. You have to wash his head first. Lay down him on his back. And hold his head over the water so smoke and salt won't get in his eyes.
I got it.
That's right. Oh,
that's
enough.
Here we go.
Oh, he's
going
in the water.
Here we go.
And he goes, that's it.
Yeah. Look, he's reaching for something. The baby is carefully washed down as it sits in the sink, now out on the cart.
How about Bartholomew?
Bartholomew? What sort of a name's that? You can't call a baby Bartholomew.
Well, it's got a bit of class, that is. Bartholomew Steptoe.
Yeah, it's too puffy. I don't know what your problem is. Albert Winston, that's the one.
I'm not calling him Albert, so you can forget it. Yeah, he's a good one. Gervais.
Sounds like a lump of French cheese.
Peter Gervais is a very old English name.
So's Albert.
Look, I am not calling him Albert. It is far too common. He's my son. I'll call him what I like.
Here, some of them film stars has nice names. Dirk Steptoe. Kirk Steptoe.
Yeah, well, the kids around here find out, Burke Steptoe.
Well, he's got to have a name.
Arbuthnot. That's all right. I was only joking. Well, come on, hurry up. We've got to call him something. How about Peregrine?
No, Albert.
I'm not calling him Albert. Never, never, never.
Harold hands over the baby to the vicar.
Yeah, what's his name?
We haven't got one yet.
Oh.
Could we call him after you?
Oh.
All right. What's your name, please?
Albert.
Harold closes his eyes in resignation. Back at home, the two men sit in armchairs by the fireside. Harold has a pipe in his mouth while Albert sips a drink.
Father, I think the time has come to discuss Jeremy's future.
Albert's future.
Albert to Jeremy. And I think, and when you've gone, Jeremy Albert. Now, if he's going to go to Eton, we ought to get his name down now.
Eton?
Yes, I think so. I don't like them straw hats they wear, Era.
What are you talking about? They wouldn't have a rag and bone man son at Eton.
I don't see why not. You can't go anywhere if you've got the money.
Yeah, but you ain't got no money.
No, but you have.
You're not having my money.
It's for your grandson's education.
I don't care. It's mine.
Anyone want it till he's 13? Gordon Berry, you'll be 83 by then. Now, look, if you was to make out a deed of covenant, you'd avoid all of them death duties.
I intend to, mate. As long as I can.
Well, you can't live forever. Even you've got to die sometime.
Don't keep on about me dying. You know it upsets me. I'm going to die. I've got years to go. I'm as fit as a fiddle.
Yes, I know.
But I am not going to die.
See, you almost went then. Now, it could happen any time. While you're sat on the loo, while you're having a drink, while I'm talking to you, any time. You could go just like that. And it would all go to the taxmen. And Jeremy's got his whole future before him. Eton. You're at Gordonstoun. 3 years at Cambridge. Straight into Sandhurst.
The household cavalry. Lieutenant Jiggers Steptoe. Can't you see? Proud, anyway. He's all striding down the mall.
Pulling his cart behind him.
Pulling...
No!
He'd come into the business like all the Steptoes have.
No, he won't, because I won't let him. He's going to have a chance. He's not going to end up like me. He's going to have all the things I never had.
Not on my money, he's not. He can stand on his own 2 feet like I had to. I don't approve of inherited wealth.
All right! Stop your money! We don't need it. I'll do it on my own, because I'll work. I'll work all the hours God sends, because that boy is going to have the best that money can buy.
Exiting a newsagent's bag over his shoulder, Harold yawns. Young paperboys shove past him. He climbs on a bike.
Quiet!
He quickly dismounts. Carrying a tattered green chaise long over his head, he stumbles down the steps from a house and dumps it onto his cart. Dead on his feet, he rests his head against the top of a broom handle as he waits to clean a public toilet.
Masterful.
Looking half asleep, he wanders out of the stable, Delilah's bridle over his shoulder. He hangs it on a nail on the wooden door, then eyes closed, staggers ungamely across the yard past the manure pile. He spies the baby's pram and, smiling, runs towards it. The pram is empty. He yawns and walks through the front door.
Dad!
Albert lies semi-comatose on the sofa. Harold walks past him, flops into an armchair by the fire, then picks up and throws a garish green cushion at his father's head.
That's my bleeding tea.
God blimey, is it that time already?
How's little Jeremy?
Little Albert is out in the yard having a bit of fresh air.
You will.
He's in his pram.
Blinking several times, Harold moves towards his father, pointing at him with his finger.
He's not in his pram, Dad.
Of course he is. I put him there myself.
A worried expression on his face, Harold rushes outside, Albert close behind him.
He was out here. I strapped him in.
Someone's tightening
him now.
Why should I let him out here?
I always leave him out here. Sam's always left you out here. Nobody ever bothered to nick you.
What the Christ they had!
Hey, what's that?
A note.
Please forgive me. I've taken him back. I can now give him a better chance in life than he could have with you. Thank you for looking after him. Yes, please do not look for us.
Where are you going?
I'm going to find him. She ain't going to get away with that.
But you don't even know where she is.
Don't you worry. I'll find her.
A banner reads Old Wentonians Rugby Football Club. Below it, wearing her sequin green dress, Zita dances seductively facing the band. A man walks across the busy room balancing a pint of beer on his forehead. He reaches his friends and it falls onto them. Harold appears through a side door dressed in a jacket and red tie. He squeezes between two groups of men and spies her on the stage. He looks away, trying to remain inconspicuous, all the while wearing a serious expression. He removes his jacket and manoeuvres himself over to lean on the bar, all the while watching her performance.
Half of it's fire.
Zita runs her hands down her chest and removes the top half of her dress to reveal the sparkling purple bikini top. With her back to a table of men, she moves her hips from side to side. As she whips off the bottom half of her dress, one of the men lurches forward and grabs her. Seeing this, Harold throws down his drink and rushes forward. After an unsuccessful attempt to pull the noisy rabble off her, he picks up a chair and cracks over one of their backs. The man angrily turns and picks up Harold above his head.
Who wants him? Over here!
Two men catch him as he is flung towards them. They throw him onto the table in front of them, which smashes on his impact. He's grabbed off the ground by the mob, blood on his face. Zita watches as trousers now half down, he is swung back and forwards and launched along a long table, bottles cracking under his back. Beer is lashed over his face and he is spun around like an upturned tortoise. Landing on the ground, he stands to fight his surrounding assailants. One man holds Harold's trousers up and throws them over his head. He is then grabbed from behind and pushed around a circle from person to person.
You run,
What a rotten sport!
As more people fall around, an African-American pianist from the band stops playing and runs over to grab Zita, then Harold from the unruly rabble.
Listen, bring him out this time!
He opens a side exit from the stage. Zita helps a dazed Harold up. He lands a final punch on the face of one man. Harold hurls a flower pot which smashes above his aggressor's head before he's ushered through the door.
It's in here. You can get through the window.
You better split, man.
Harold hangs his head, bent over double.
You all right?
Yeah, I'm all right.
Zita pours some gin into a mug and brings it over to him.
What do you have to come here for?
I'll see you, don't worry.
He forcefully pushes it away.
I'll come here for the baby.
Let's go, Harold, go home, please.
Look, I've had enough for one night. You just tell me where it is and I'll go and get it.
No, Harold, you can't.
Don't tell me I can't. It's my baby. Now, where is it?
Look, Harold.
It's all right. There's nothing wrong with it.
No, it's fine, but...
You haven't brought it to work with you.
Harold, don't, please.
He throws open a set of curtains and looks down to see a wide-eyed black baby staring back at him. The piano player enters quietly, closes the door and walks up to Zita, placing his arms around her.
Everything's okay, darling. It's quiet out there now. Are you all right?
She smiles. Back to present day, riding on the cart through central London.
That one wasn't mine either. I must be the only bloke who's lost two kids in one day.
I never met the black one. I only knew the white one.
He'll be 3 years old now. I wonder what Jeremy's mother calls him now.
Albert, of course.
I doubt he's a doll.
A black limousine pulls out of a junction directly behind them. A small royal flag flies in the front. They turn and give the car the two-fingered V sign. Realising their error, they look down solemnly and remove their hats. As the car passes, a dark-suited arm with gold cresting on the cuff extends from the back window and reciprocates the gesture. They look at each other and their faces break into smiles as they turn onto the mall and follow the car up to Buckingham Palace. The end.
We've a severe weather warning with a hurricane of human proportions blowing from England through the continent to the coast. Families separated, travel plans delayed, a trail of disaster. It's Rowan Atkinson heading for the south of France. Mr. Bean's holiday, now on Skybox Office.